Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm Sam Moores, and with us today we have Farouk Heplevent. Hello.
Hi, Sam. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Can you tell the listeners a sort of short summary of like who you are and what you do?
I am the owner, founder, and CEO of The Scope, a studio that is focused on automotive, CGI, film, and photo production. And my background is photography. So I started back 1989, to be very honest. Started interning with photographers and had a somewhat long career as an assistant up to 1999, and started shooting myself back then together with a partner, which was quite a new thing, 99, to have teams working together as photographers. So we did that for a while, had a blast, traveled a lot, saw a lot. Being a car photographer essentially is not a bad thing because you follow the sun throughout the year, right? So the hotspots are California, Southern Spain, Cape Town, Italy. So that's all cool. But when the family started growing, my wife essentially said, well, I didn't really want to marry a sailor that's gone 6 months out of the year. So, I started looking into other opportunities. And back in 2006, I would say, CGI in the German car market was getting very strong, being very present. And, I lost a job to CGI. That's when that basically started that triggered my interest for CG quite a bit. Then I started Scope firstly as a retouching studio for the photo work we were doing. And then after a while I said, okay, I'm going to, basically stay home, focus on post-production at that point, which slowly turned into actual production. So what we do is full CGI work, which is not the most elegant word in the English language, but it means it's everything is created in the computer. So we started out with creating sets, and because we learned very early in the process that we're good with locations and lighting and all these things, but could not necessarily compete with big studios because, today there are big studios. Back then there were big studios with 200-300 people, very technical, direct pipelines to the manufacturers and all these things. So we said, let's focus on the creative side of things. This is where we're coming from. And when we grew the team, I recruited creators, so non-technical people. I mean, technically inclined, let's say, but not train CG people, which also was considered to be dumb, I would say, in the market back then. Yeah. But in my eyes, it turned out quite successfully, because we always approach work looking at it as like, what do we want to achieve creatively? And how do we get technology to do that? It's a very different perspective to approach this type of production. And we kept developing that and more specialized on creating larger locations, because the projects that we started to get booked on were getting more and more into what we call the launch. So when you have, you know, when they publish a car or introduce a car for the first time, it's obviously secret. You don't want to get it out on the street. And over the last couple of years, they moved more and more into CGI work, because you don't have to actually hand build the car, send it to location, yeah, do all these things, which, you know, they would do. You know, I did that as a car photographer. We worked on those projects. So they save time. It's safer. The timelines are shorter. And then we started moving into film as well, because the client said, well, photo is great, but we need photo and film. You know, it's social media, internet, all these things. So we figured out film, and doing that, we learned, well, we need to build the full location. It doesn't help just to build a corner. This is what we're doing before. And when you do it for photo, actually is a better workflow, because it can be very precise and don't have to worry about what's behind you. But when you do film, you need to be able to move around and do all these things. And when you change lights, it needs to react correctly. And the only way to get a good quality output for that is you build a full location and behave as if you're on location shooting. So this is our, you know, philosophy. This is how we approach things. And launch work got, you know, we booked more and more launch jobs where, you know, specialize in launches. And I'm sorry, to be able to do that, you know, we need to have locations every time, you know, in the times where we're not on a launch job, we work on optimizing locations, creating locations. And when COVID hit, you know, you would think that we would have been super duper busy. That's also what I thought when it started, but it turned out that, you know, due to delivery issues, they didn't have to advertise. They sold pretty much any car they could get on the lot, right? They're like, oh, let's save the marketing money. So it was very, you know, counterintuitive. And we used that time to build Scope City, which is, you know, I think is a great achievement that the team has put together. They created a tool that generates full CG cities that can also be, you know, re-edited, produced individually per brand and these things. So.
Interesting.
This is the short introduction.
Yeah. We've sort of covered the sort of, you know, from the beginnings to now. My experience of, I wouldn't even call it CGI, is like, I'm a photographer and I do a little bit of photoshopping and stuff like that. But I've not really done much of replacing backgrounds, like a little bit, but only very, very, very simple. And starting to use a bit of AI to sort of help with some of that, although it's pretty clunky. And I can see how it's interesting, like how that has developed, where you go, you started off presumably creating a background in one direction sort of thing. And how has the software sort of changed, and how has that helped you sort of transition through this?
Well, the software, and this is something that was pretty clear to us very early on. It's, we realized, well, you know, if we keep going this direction, it'll only get better, right? The software, the technology is walking towards us, if you, you know, want to look at it that way. So, you know, the amount of RAM that we could have, the graphic cards, everything, you know, the way that the software, the CG software manufacturers are deploying AI within the software already for a few years. They've been doing that for a few years. They, you know, they called it machine learning before AI was the thing. Pretty much the same thing. So we saw these developments. And for example, the last 6 months, there was an update in NVIDIA algorithm that helps V-Ray, which is our main render engine that we're using, to denoise images. You know, that expedited our render times.
Oh, interesting.
So they're much faster. It's you know, very under the hood, but very relevant for us.
Yeah. Sort of what could be seen as a small update note in the release, and you're like, oh wow, that's saved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it saves like 40% to 60% render time sometimes. It's that, and that's huge, you know.
And what software are you using? Are you using, for the big stuff, are you using like gaming engines and things like that?
We're not. We're using Maya, V-Ray. Maya is our main tool and V-Ray is a render engine. And for the city development, we use the software called Houdini, which is an incredible piece of software, fairly complex to operate, but it has gotten much better because a couple of years ago, the Houdini guys would actually be coding to do something, right? And now they at least have nodes that they can connect. You know, but once you get it to work, once you get something set up in Houdini, you have the power of procedural algorithmic. So, you know, it's very, very powerful, but it's not just clicking and it works. Yeah. You need to put it, plug it together.
I know there's a separate bit of the building sort of the model and then the rendering it. Like when you're most of the time, you sort of almost working with like kind of like wire model type gray objects and et cetera, building it all. And then you decide where the light's coming from, all that sort of stuff as you are outputting it. Or does it all, does it literally build in 3D as you're doing it?
Essentially you pre-build it, or for example, the car is delivered from the manufacturers and then we prep it with our materials. So they're also tuned to work with V-Ray. That is something that's developing in the market, which is also very interesting. What tech people, let's say, are trying to do, they created this thing called USD, Unique Scene Description. This is something that Pixar had developed a couple of years ago for their internal use. Very simply said, they're trying to establish a PDF of 3D. Because right now, the situation is Maya needs this, 3ds Max needs this, Cinema needs this, Unreal, it's maddening. You cannot, everybody says, just export this. It doesn't work. But since there's so many more use cases now than there were a couple of years ago, especially with the actual metaverse coming, I think, everybody's trying to, you know, simplify it so more people can actually use it without going crazy, or it's not in silos so much.
Yeah.
And there is USD, and then the next thing is Material X, so that you have a material, which in essence is the file saying, this is the shine, this is the color, this is the reflectivity, that works across all applications. The game engine thing is, you know, Unreal has huge marketing power behind it. It pushed into the market. And every time we looked at it, we're like, it's, if you move into professional world, I mean, as a photographer, it's like, the iPhone 15 can, you know, can take great photos, but Hasselblad is a Hasselblad, you know? So it's, it's just, there's a different league when you're using it professionally, and the game engine thing, it's faster. I don't know. The speed thing is an interesting trigger for clients mainly. It's faster.
Yeah.
You know, if you get shit faster, it doesn't get better.
I know what you're saying. I guess those game engines.
Sorry, but can I say that?
That's sure. Right. Those game engines, I guess, fundamentally are designed for making stuff instantly as you're doing it, like building it instantly as you're doing it. which presumably is
interacting.
What you're doing.
Like, No, the interactive side of, looking at it technically, they're built to deliver 60, 80 frames per second. And to achieve that, they need to cut corners, right? I mean, very smart, fantastic. I mean, it's quality that you see today is fantastic within a game, but it doesn't necessarily mean you can use that for image production.
Yeah.
Because then you're missing the mask and this and that, a million things. And it's, and then Unreal went ahead and put what they call path traces or better light calculation on top. And then you're as slow as all the other things. Maybe you're a bit faster, but it's, totally switching to another system is not worth it in our perception.
Yeah. And then, so you've gone through this evolution of simple photography type stuff. And then now you're starting to build your own spaces, which, thinking about it, makes sense. Rather than going for each project, they want a street with a whatever. Okay, let's build that from start.
Yeah.
You've now built a city. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That then presumably you can go, give me your car model, hopefully with this correct format and the materials so that we can just drop it in, which I imagine there is a lot of work in the middle of that.
it takes a little work, but essentially simplified, that's what it is. And the amazing thing, and still being looking at the world from a creator point of view, it is what we call creative freedom, production control. The technology gives us a control. We can be in sunset for 4 weeks straight.
Yeah.
Right. We don't care. We can be in rain, or we can be at 12, high noon, winter, you have all these things under control, and then you can set the angle, focus on the light. So essentially we're getting to a point, and this is something I always was hoping to achieve, is to point and shoot, right?
Mm.
It is, and the systems are getting so quick that you can move around fairly quickly. The full city, no. You need to turn certain things off, but can move quickly enough to see the shot, and it shows it. It's like a Polaroid, right? It takes like 30 seconds. I mean, it's faster than Polaroid back then, but and it is, you have the opportunity to go in and see and shoot. It's amazing.
It really ignites the sort of the techie person in me. Like I love photography. I love light and angles and whatever, but I also like kit and technology and computers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there is definitely this gap of, I'd quite like to try that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see it in film when they go, I want to make this shot. And then you see the behind the scenes of this crazy rigs and cameras being passed amongst people and going through windows and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas on this, you can do the path of the camera, change the speeds.
And I think this is, it's also, obviously, I mean, I'm sure you had it as well. It's a lot of communication about AI. And in my perception, it is a little bit like going from film to digital photography, or retouching or not retouching. Because when I started working, digital retouching didn't exist.
Yeah.
The only retouching that existed for the first guys that I worked for, they were shooting 8x10 transparencies, right? There was this guy who would airbrush gradients on transparency.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he's like, he was like this crazy dude with long hair and somewhere in the basement, and I would have to go there as an assistant. And he said, pss, pss.
See?
And my first boss, he was like, every time he had to have something retouched, he was heartbroken, because it meant, as a craftsman, he failed. That's how he looked at it.
Yeah.
So going from there to people actually using Silicon Graphics machines to do the first retouching things, mixing exposures, doing all that. into full-blown over-retouched Photoshop hell.
Yeah, HDR right. Back in the day.
Yeah, so it's technology is great when you need to use it wisely and always respect the craft, respect the truths. You know, it's like perspective is perspective, light is this. So don't go in and just upscale a mountain because you feel, oh, okay, do it. It's that simple. And that's the interesting thing. Even though we're so technical, and we're using, you know, let's say cutting edge technology, we're always trying to say, oh, how can I get into this situation where I'm on location, I see it, I shoot it, I'm happy, right?
Yeah.
So this is what we're trying to, and the conversations about happy accidents not happening in CG, I would say yes, but that has changed. The speed of technology allows me to turn the sound, turn the camera, and see it fairly quickly and say, oh, this looks like a picture. Let's try this. Let's try that. So you get in the flow without having to brief six people to update something, change it, and come back to you. And something similar, I think, is happening in AI as well. You know, of course, we played with it. We did this. It's great for mood boards and bouncing around ideas, especially when you work internationally and language fails you. Images yeah. always help, right? You're like, oh, what do you, you know, just point at the one you like. Helps, really helps. Helps everybody, actually. Also, my team, they're like, oh, this feels good. And they know what they need to do instead of, you know, reading. Yeah. Copy. I don't even know if they actually read it, but I'll only look at the pictures. But it's, you know, because the moment you read something, the interpretation is very, very different culture to culture, person to person, you know, depending where you're on the pipelines. And the pictures really do help. I believe that all the AI scare, there's a point to it. But there's going to be good prompters, right? There's going to be people who can prompt well and manage it. And I see, you know, photo agents picking up prompters, let's say. Because in the end, is the client going to type it up in Word? No, they're not. You know, they're going to ask somebody to do it for them, which is fine. You know, that's good, right? Just,
yeah.
So I'm not so afraid of, I mean, you know, maybe I'm also ignorant, but since I went from, you know, film to digital, retouching, no retouching, retouching film to digital, social media film. So it's the way the world works and you need to find your place in it. But, you know, thinking creative and saying, how can I use this tool to express something that I want? But in the end, you're going to show it to humans. They need to react to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Having that creative like connection overall is really important. I don't know whether you find this. I see some launches of campaigns and various things and press imagery that's clearly being CGI'd. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's terrible. Sometimes you can't tell the difference. And then I'm like, you've absolutely nailed it. I know it's probably not right because the location is just a bit, I feel like that didn't exist. But other than that, you get these things, for example, you see it a lot in where you've got two cars. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just I don't know why they do this, but you might have two cars and they want to show the front and the back. So they'll both be driving down a road and, you know, the wheels are spinning and you're like, so one of those is going backwards.
Yeah, but they've done it in retouching as well. That's just a no-go
100%,
picture, right?
Yeah, that's...
It's like, you know, this is one of the things where they're like, yeah, we can do it. Let's do it. Finally. Then both are in focus. And like, well, yeah, because, you know, if that makes your day, do it. But it's not exactly, you're right. I mean, one is going backwards full speed.
Yeah.
So, but it is, I mentioned that in another conversation and there's interesting, there's a cool dude that does YouTube videos that's called No CGI, where he basically shows where they use CGI, where Christopher Nolan says no CGI in this film. It's like, he's like, okay, CGI breakdown. But I think it's okay. I don't mind being invisible. So I was saying to somebody the other day, we're like the man in black, right? Because, you know, essentially we're successful if nobody knows that we've done it.
Yeah.
Look at the picture or the film does its job. And it's not about, oh, is it CGI? Is it not CGI? It's just a good picture, right? Because, you know it when you're a photographer, if you photograph something, essentially the moment you press the shutter, select the picture, you made an edit of reality.
100%.
So it's authentic, real. You know, philosophically, what is it? I don't know.
I know with the new, it's funny to say a new Leica camera because the sort of techie person could go, well, they never make anything new. But they just released one that has some, like, I can't remember what the correct terminology is, but it's basically like copyright technology built in the sense of it verifies that what you are showing is the raw image.
All right, okay.
And it will track changes to that.
Interesting.
For me, it's not important in the slightest for what any of the stuff I do, because my opinion is always I'm trying to show like a vision or sort of some stylized whatever version of whatever it is. It's always edited. Like in my mind, it's always edited because I've chosen to kick a can off the floor out of the way, or I've shot in this direction. If anyone's watching people who are watching on YouTube, it looks like I'm in some sort of crazy studio. Well, this thing is a pop-up background and behind there's loads of rubbish. So it's all
exactly.
edited.
You edit reality, and I think everybody does, and it's okay. It's like, not today, but you shave in the morning.
Exactly.
Comb your hair. That's all fine. So it's, and it is, especially visual communication is about what do you want the audience to feel, to see, to, you try to communicate something, not document it. Even if you're documenting, and we all know that there was this fantastic, I think, Guardian campaign a couple of years ago, a TV commercial where they show somebody running at an older man and pushing him. Do you know that one? I don't know what the name is.
One.
So essentially it's black and white, and it's a skinhead type of character. And he's, running towards an old man and basically tackling him, right? And so this is the first, you're like, oh, he's attacking him. Then they pull back, show it from a different angle, and you see something is dropping from the construction site. So he's saving him. So, right? That shows a very nicely. I think that was a brilliant, brilliant TVC. It was about the garden, perspective matters, so something like that. But, again, for me, it's if you use AI, CGI, photography, painting, if you get it across, cool. I mean, CGI and professional, Carl Land has very clear advantages, right? It's like you don't have to transport the car, secrecy, it is. Essentially, it's also much more sustainable because we're rendering with renewable energy. Most people are still, doing hybrid work. But I walk to the office. I'm not flying to Cape Town. I'm not flying.
Yeah.
Could say, well, yeah, three people. Is that going to make a difference? I don't know. But it's,
it's something.
If you compare it directly, it is less, polluting. And shooting.
Yeah, and there's the sort of commercial world for me.
Yeah.
CGI type stuff as it gets, as it changes and evolves and gets better, it seems like the perfect solution. Now, I do some commercial photography and I don't do CGI at the moment, so that is, effectively putting me out. But I'm not really doing launches and things, so I don't see it. Just is just a different situation, and maybe I'll start using it and whatnot. And I don't, as a sort of consumer of the media, I don't care. Like, if Yeah. If someone's launched a new Ferrari and there's a video, the only thing that annoys me is if it's really bad CGI.
Worst competitor. This is also what I keep saying. My worst competitor is not the other studios. Actually, it's still a fairly small community.
Yeah.
Worst competitor is bad CGI. Because, you know, once a client had a bad experience with CGI, it's really... how do you get it out of them, right? They're like, no, I tried it, doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, we were evangelizing, let's say, for quite a while. It's like, oh, we can do this, you can do that. And then at one point I said, okay, I need to stop this because people, I can explain it to them if they want to do it. But every time I'm in a situation where like, yeah, you need to prove to me that it works and it's better than shooting, I'm like, if you don't need it and you would prefer to shoot, go shoot. It's fine. You know, I'm not, because you cannot overcome that. And with all creative work, I mean, I can walk in and start marking it up. You know, from Nick Knight to Nolan, right? Because that edit was bad.
Yeah.
Because there's always so many choices. Killing creative is super easy. So that's why we learned it's important to find clients that actually want to do what we're offering and then say, well, you know, show me what you do, how you do it, how do you do it differently, what is your creative vision? But if you have to discuss whether or not what we're doing is the way to go, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's like saying, oh, I'm a photographer, and they're like, yeah, film is kind of better. And they're like, no, photo is better. And what are you talking?
Yeah. Go talk to someone else then, though.
Exactly. Talk to film people. That's fine.
You said something about the creative decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the world of CGI, and I'm sure it'd be interesting to know some of the limitations that we're at the moment and sort of what's easy and what's not, but also how do you come up with the creative? Because you can, in theory, do anything. So that is such a wide spectrum. How on earth do you sort of narrow that down?
Well, for us, it's... and I think that's also why cars is an interesting place to be in. It's like the symphony is always the same. It's always Beethoven's Ninth. You know, that doesn't change.
Yeah.
Car is the hero, travels from city to landscape, private home to, you know, Mercedes did it with flying cars, floating cars. But when you look at car work that is out there, it's really, you only have one, you know, you have dancing hamsters once a decade, and then you have floating Mercedes once a decade. So it's you know, outliers. Yeah. They're not going to happen with us anyway. So you're going to pick somebody that never had anything to do with cars and let them go wild, which is also cool. I think that's important. But for what we do, you know, if you show the car for the first time, obviously, you know, you have concepts and ideas, but the car launch per se is so special because our main clients are the head of design, the head of marketing, and CEO usually. Yeah. Because it's always such an important event. And if you have a CEO's involved when it's an important car, because they're going to be standing in front of the video or the photo. So they care. Their assistants care, right? They're like, let me see what's going on. And it is very clear it's about the car. They're not like, oh, yeah, car is cool, but can we have some hamsters? Yeah. No, they don't want hamsters at that stage, right? They don't want fantastic models, supermodels floating through the picture. No, because first of all, they're introducing the car. Secondly, it is something that very smart, very talented people spent years building. Three and a half years is about the time they're investing to get a new car on the street that they introduce. So it is only about the car in the long situation. Yeah. So location, the creative, everything needs to really be strong supporting actors. And since that is a situation where we cater to very high, very alpha individuals that are used to making decisions, just quickly, but they're not reading the briefs either, right? They're like, they look at the picture and they say, I like it, I don't like it, I like it, I don't like it. This is also how it should be decided. Does it feel good? All right, cool, let's go with it. That is very difficult to manage when you're doing a shoot because you need to get the location approved, disapproved, that approved, car needs to be sent there, kept secret and all these things. And you can only show half-finished work to them. The half-finished work, even if they approve something half-finished, they don't like it in the end. They're like, I don't like it. If you go say, well, you approved it. And they're like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe, but I don't like it now. You need money because they can, they can sign checks.
Yeah.
That, normal projects, they don't have checks. They're like, okay, I don't like it. How much you need? We had that, right? On the Mercedes launch, the assistant of Tetra back then is like, well, he wants it differently. Can you do it? How much you need? Never heard that before.
Yeah.
It can happen in these circumstances. So CGI gives us the production control to be able to react to it. And, we can render a smaller resolution. They can look at a 2,000 pixel picture and say, okay, this feels good. And it's going to be the same in 10K. We can say, yes, of course, it's 10,000 pixels.
Yeah.
It's going to look the same. And then they have the agency people, the creative directors, us work on the details, that the highlights and the rims.
Yeah, yeah.
But so we can show something and deliver, show, deliver. That is very powerful.
That is. And when you're rendering out, like, you've got a car driving through a cityscape, different angles, et cetera, and sort of stuff like that.
Yeah.
What sort, from when you go, right, let's get the final version rendered out. What sort of timelines, like scales, is it to render something like that?
Well, it is. It varies, obviously, like everything. But let's say a preview render, we look at previous renders that render 10 minutes per frame on a single machine. Okay. So that is already the quick solution for us. And if you then take it to 4K with all the layers and, it's like, and a higher render resolution, it goes up. We try to stay between 2 to 4 hours max per frame.
A frame?
Yes.
And are you...
In 4K.
Are you giving a video at like 24 frames or something like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you want to make sure it's right before you...
Yeah, exactly. You want to make sure your previews are right and your render settings are good. And so there's guys in the team that are specialized in doing, pre-render checks. Yeah. They do a single frame. We all look at it together because once you hit the big red button, we have a fairly large farm. So we have, 45 nodes. So nodes being machines that can render in different strengths. But more recent ones manage to render. So, they render in 1 hour and the old machines need 3 hours, something like that. But we also use cloud render services.
Okay.
So V-Ray has their own cloud render service, which is very reliable, which is cool. And then you can essentially say, okay, I'm sending off all the shots or all the frames. And then you have 400 machines rendering at the same time. You want to make sure you did your settings properly before you send 400 machines burning through your credit card, in 2 hours. That is fairly costly, but it's
available. Yeah,
it's available. So if it's not, we'll render over the weekend, renders at night. So we stack. But we have the option to hit a big render button if we need to.
Yeah, and I guess you could build your clip in 10 parts. and then put it together.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly. It's shot by shot. So essentially, it's like shooting. And the preview stuff, actually, you know, even 10 minutes sounds long, but, you know, this is what we do. And then we send it off and we collect the dailies. The next morning, the editor looks at it. We start building the edit. So compared to regular shoot, where you need to go out and get everything and then edit, we have the advantage of, you know, we do a scrap edit and say, okay, these are the shots we want to capture. And then we start lighting and creating cameras, render the previews, and then it, you know, comes together nicely. So it comes, there's on the website, I think there is also a few clips where you see how the shot develops. I think it's called the evolution of a shot, where you see it grainy in the beginning and then you see the final quality in the Scope City, on the Scope City site.
Oh, nice.
There's
okay,
a few samples. Yeah.
Share my screen. It'll come up for those there.
Yeah. If you scroll down, there is, that's the film and larger. Obviously, when we do film, we can do photo. Yeah, these.
Okay.
If you, for example, hit the one on the left. So this is the preview, the one that you see first. And then, you know, it gets, we add traffic, people, we add light, grading, do another preview. We say, okay, this is it. And then hit the big render button, right?
It looks, the final results of this stuff now looks so good.
Thank you.
Like, it's just, it's mental. Like, considering what I've, you know, what you can sort of come across, or even like 10 years ago, someone doing the best they can do, you're like, it's obviously CGI.
Yeah.
It's getting, we're getting so much closer slash kind of there. As you're saying, this launch stuff is about the car. So it's like, everything else is sort of in the background. You're not really focused on it. It is very cool. And I love the sort of ability to sort of craft it as you're going.
Yeah,
and it does really sound like an art.
The creative freedom, again, it's, for me, it's, it took a long time to get here, but it is, it's fantastic. You know, it's really, you know, let's say we're done with the conversation, I'll go back and then, you know, we're working on a project. So I'll sit next to somebody and say, oh, let me see that shot. Oh, I like it. Oh, maybe let's try the light a bit more left. And compared to going out and shooting where you have, you know, location, this, that, production is like, no, you need to share this. It can be totally focused on creative. And inputs, so what materials can do, what, you know, the locations that we're building, the capabilities of the render engines. And they're so good. Now is the point where it's like, okay, it's, you know, how good are you at your own craft, creating images, creating films, deciding colors and all these things, making creative calls. That is what it's about. Before it was like, oh, how do we get it done to be
sort of work,
comparable to it? But we, you know, in a way we are beyond that. And there was also always the promise of the game engines being so quick that people can make creative decisions faster. Problem is, when it doesn't look great, it doesn't help to be quick.
I've not really thought about it as sort of like, kind of like doing a shoot, like when you're building your final output. It's like doing a shoot in the sense of you're like, right, okay, we've got the location, we've got the car, what do you want to do with the car? I can now pick where the sun is and the weather. Amazing, that gives me a lot more time. And just creative control. But then you're like, well, what shot do I want? Okay, we want a shot like this, a shot like this. You know, you build your shot list and you create them, and then you edit them all together as if you just shot them sort of normally.
And what is fantastic is, and that is, you know, that moves us into old school Hollywood realm, let's say, because Hollywood always had enough money to say, I didn't like it in the edit, let's go back and pick up. Do a pickup, right? Yeah, let's bring Brad Pitt in again and all the stuntmen. And maybe, you know, I want to shot from the left.
Yeah, shut down London. Let's do it again.
So, do all that, you know. It's like, I didn't like what I got. So obviously for anybody outside of Hollywood big production, it was never an option.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us, it's like, oh, yeah, just something like, ah, with the music, bah, wouldn't it be cool to have the camera, you know, the left pan when I edit here? Or I want the car to come in exactly here in the frame. You're like, oh, okay, you walk to the next room. It's like, oh, Matthias, can we just do this? And boom, done. Magic.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That is magic. I mean,
no, but that's what I mean with creative freedom. It's like you're not, you know, the restrictions, the boundaries that you have, that reality imposes on you, they're kind of lifted. But as you say, I mean, I could also decide to say, oh, fantastic, I only want pink cars and teddy bears driving in it. Well, if that rocks your world, do it. You know, that's your creative vision. This is not what we do. You could go there, but since our story is written, it's cars driving this, doing that, I want to show the headlights, the rim, that's fine. But, you know, we can, it's like, you know, we tell the variation of the same joke over and over again, and we're happy to do it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, it's always a little twist to it, or it's like, you know, the typical act, you know, hero story, right? Oh, here's the first time it is for that car, for that group of people, for that brand at that point in time. It's the first portrait of the car that they're sharing with the world. Super important.
And building the Scope City, for example, what sort of size of project was that?
Huge. So Scope City is an interesting project because it's, you know, the building a full CG city usually is in the land of the ILMs, right? Industrial Light and Magic, the dudes that do Star Wars and, you know, big Hollywood stuff. Because, you know, it takes time, needs a lot of people. It's the extreme technological challenges. We always wanted to do it, but is this a project you start, you're like, oh, we need to do all this.
Big, yeah.
Right? So, but when COVID hit, it was a good opportunity and said, okay, guys, let's do this. Because, you know, it was kind of slow and also it helped to keep everybody focused on something else than the madness that was going on. And you know, we found a lot of ways that don't work. Right. We've seen a lot of dark alleys. Let's put it that way. In getting to the solution, and yeah, because essentially you need to make it look good, the textures, the modeling, the system, the technology. You know, it never stops. If you look at it as a recipe, you're like, oh yeah, okay, you know, everybody in our world kind of gets it. You're like, oh yeah, Houdini, it's procedural, yeah, rule based, okay, I get that. Ah, this is how you do your textures, da, 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 da. But you know, actually plugging it together and making it work is actual, you know, finessing it and making sure it does work reliably, repeatedly. That was very challenging. It took 3 years. 3 years.
Wow. And then now you can zoom into any street, any corner, any bit. I presume you've built in some funky places within it.
No, it works a bit different. It's more a, are you familiar with the back lots that in Hollywood? So essentially what the Hollywood studios have is they have city streets built on where their sound stages are in Los Angeles. So, you know, this is where they shoot shows like Seinfeld walking down the street. This is where they shoot it. And this was also a popular location for secret cars because you can have a locked set and still have a city situation. So the thinking is similar. So you have, you know, let's say our normal size is like 10 city blocks, which is already pretty large to navigate in.
Yeah.
And what we do is we either design streets that we feel we should have, or there is this other solution where you go into open street map data And our system can read out OpenStreetMap. So it says, oh, this is how the street, here's a curve, here's an intersection. Yeah. And these are the buildings. And depending on which city you're in, there's different information embedded in OpenStreetMap. And the American cities have, you know, the building height and these things. Yeah. So Houdini reads that information and creates a building.
Okay, cool.
But it doesn't do a replication of the actual building, because for us, it's good to have a generic city.
Yeah.
Because if you rebuild actual buildings, then you have intellectual property things and all these things. We just want the feeling of
a city,
the feeling of LA. And we need to have the modules that can represent that city. So we could not output London right now or Paris.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Because we don't have the input modules that represent that architecture. So it's also an ongoing project, right? So it's a more European city, but there's a Chinese, you know, Asian city, Japanese city.
It's not like you built a city. It's like you've got an evolving, and it can be bits of different cities if you need it that you can add in. Interesting.
Yeah. So you could, you know, keep the general infrastructure and, you know, change signage.
Yeah.
But when you look at a city like New York or Los Angeles, you kind of feel the difference in the city because, and this is also things that we've learned in city planning, building, LA planning, they had more room. They're like, oh, let's make the lots bigger. Yeah. They have huge lots, right? Compared to New York, where everything is very tight.
Yeah.
And you have different rules and all these things. So different materials that they're using. So you get a feel fairly quickly. And at the same time, we're looking at a city from a car's perspective, right? For us, you know, where the car is the most important, everything else is supporting actors. So you might not be able to, you know, do a chase on the fire escape in our city. I mean,
it's not
built for that, right? I'm sure we can upgrade it, but it's not created to do that.
There's no need at the moment.
But it's you can reconfigure it. And you know, in a lot of briefs for car clients, like, I want a mixture of modern and old buildings. So they want to feel the texture of a city, but they don't want to say, oh, this is the actual city and recreate it. I think if you want that, it's better to go out and shoot one or scan it. Or there's different solutions for that.
Yeah. And I guess if I think about most sort of launch style campaigns, as you mentioned before, it's possibly it's just a studio. That's quite easy to make.
Can be.
Or you've got your city environment. And then the other one, the classic one you see, is some sort of countryside. It could be a beach. It could be a winding mountain road. Is there a plan for us, or have you got like a set of these that you're going to work on, or are you focusing on the city at the moment?
No, the city is essentially the black belt of CG locations, right? It's like, when you look at, you know, when you find some time to look at our website, it's like everything, you know, all the images are full CG. So it's private homes, landscapes, deserts, that's all we do.
No, it's cool. In terms of what you can do now, are there some technical constraints that you're like, I'd really like to be able to do that, but either it takes too long or just the technology's not quite there? What would you like to see sort of improve?
Yeah, I mean, it's like last year we've seen the cloud system from V-Ray. That was a huge game changer because before clouds were images. And now they're actually simulated clouds and interact with the landscape. It is fantastic. But that was like, for me, the last missing part for creative freedom. What I would love to see is, and we're seeing developments in that direction, what you have game technology. So the real-time technology that is available for us when we create cameras, right? Right now, we're looking at gray shade and we send it off to render. So there's a little gap.
Yeah.
But we're actually working with the innovation department of the guys that built V-Ray, which is, they're called Chaos. The company is called Chaos, and V-Ray is one of their software tools. And they're developing that, which is super exciting, so that it will be even more real time and seamless and in it. And we have, I have not ordered one of the Apple Vision thingies there. But that might be fantastic if it works, where you're like, you and your client, you're on set and you're like, oh, let's turn this on. And I like it. And then put the camera there, right? So to be able to do something like that, I think that's going to be possible. At much more, I mean, obviously the tech fun of it sounds exciting, but if it really helps to create faster, and faster usually means we have more time to create better quality.
Yeah.
Because every time you have like a technological advance, you have like 3-6 months, and then everybody's like, oh, you can do that. So I'm going to cut the time.
Right? Yeah.
But interestingly, also with what we are experiencing, so you're like, oh, now it's faster. Okay, then you save time. And then you realize, well, actually, I need to think about what I want to do before. Because just doing it because I can do it quicker doesn't mean I'm going to get a good result.
Yeah.
And similar to digital photography, right? Shoot. But if you're not thinking about what you're doing, it's just random. So even with AI, you do layouts, you test things, but somebody needs to say, ah, this is what I like. And the reason I like it is because work with the brand is good for the guy. I mean, whatever the reason is, if you're trying to, let's say, put pictures in a blog post about, I don't know, updating your Word documents, you know, then also it's cool, right?
Yeah.
Make a nice visual, everybody happy. It's cool.
Right. Yeah, that is,
but if,
that is an interesting point, because I've definitely had that with software and working with video. I do some work with video now. And computers never seem to quite get ahead of the camera technology, in the sense that the resolutions have gone up and up and up and up. And what you kind of want to do and demand on stable, whatever it is, means that your computer's always like working really hard. So it always takes longer than you kind of want to do the task. So you actually, as you say, you have time to think about it because it's taking time to do it. I have this with some audio processing and stuff now. It just takes ages for editing these podcasts at some level. It can take like 20 minutes or something, which in your world is probably not that long, but it is set it and then you kind of got to go do something else. As soon as that gets ahead, it needs to be one notch ahead of your brain, then you're like, oh, I'm slowing this down. And also, then there's no lag. There's no delay in the system because you're like, oh, I want to do this.
Yeah, but with technology also, and it's a very famous saying with CG people, is like, you know, renders always take the same time. We use the same time for rendering that we did 8 years ago.
Yeah.
We're just putting less stuff in the scene.
Yeah.
We're just doing it like, oh, I can do that. And so let's say if you're used to 4 hours render time, you punch stuff in there until you're at 4 hours. You're always, you know, going to the limit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're just taking a picture of a car in a studio, yes. You know, it's like, you know, that's going to render in 50 minutes these days. And it took a night when we started. But, you know, the tasks are also evolving.
And then is the, let's say you're putting more in the scene.
No.
Is it now the software, the environment, well, I presume your environments are built, but then are you still adding in lots of stuff to make it the sort of, you know, it can be 8K and there's a little can on the sidewalk or whatever. Are you still going into that detail, sort of spending a lot of time on the extra stuff?
But it's the same thing that you would do when you're shooting, you know, commercially, not documentary, but, you know, so is that, you know, you go on set, you look at the shot and you're like, oh, I could use a fill here. How about I need something in the foreground? Get me a tree, you know, whatever you would do on set as well. And when it's film, the camera's moving, gets more complex. Again, our advantage is we have a stable simulation, so I can, you know, do 25 cameras on the same drive and do a preview and say, oh, I like this one. Yeah. Let's go high risk with this one. And discuss it with the team also. It's not just a pure single person's decision, which I think makes the quality better as well.
If someone wants to sort of, I know this is like we're at this end, but the sort of top end, but if someone wants to sort of, let's say myself, get into maybe doing some CG backgrounds and then inserting cars I've already shot, or I don't know whether you can get models of cars that easily these days, but where do you start and what software is quite good?
Well, I think we are using a software for creating materials and textures that is called Substance. Mm-hmm. And they're part of Adobe now for a few years. They're a fantastic piece of software. And they have, I think, something they call Stager, where you could render. We don't use it. I couldn't say I used it and it works. But I would suggest that. And what we're on a Maya V-Ray pipeline. Maya is not a fun tool to learn, so I would not do that. What the guys like is Blender, because Blender is for free, huge community, lots of resources for free, and also lots of plugins and things.
Okay.
It's interesting for us, but it's like, you know, again, in a, let's say, semi-industrial production pipeline, you need other things. It's like game PCs and HPs. You know, as you look at the numbers, you're like, why is it twice as expensive? But, you know, the HP machines that we have, some of them are running for 8 years straight without, never been turned off.
Yeah.
Never. 8 years, right? Boom. And, we have some experimental stuff, and it's like the game PCs much stronger. After 3-4 years, they're dead because we're, you know, using them in an industrial scale. but Blender is definitely absolutely worth looking at. And, you know, you can get car models. TurboSquid is a pretty known, like, you know, actually, they've been bought by Getty.
Oh, really?
So it's the Getty of 3D.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of models. And they have, if I'm not mistaken, with Ford, they actually have proper licensing. So, you know, you're safe. But there's good car models there. Again, Blender and the render engine that Blender has built in called Cycles, extremely powerful, reliable. So I would suggest to take a look
at
that.
Play. See what's what. How do you think it has it sort of changed marketing and stuff in the automotive industry? I guess a lot more people are doing it, but.
Well, it is, you know, it took longer than I expected. I hoped, let's say. Because people are slower in adapting new workflows. But and interesting that the creatives have not embraced it as much as we've done. Now there is a stronger push from the client side. because there is, you know, it's for MBA person, it's very obvious. Okay, it's faster, costs less, no transport, less.
Yeah.
Why are we not doing this, yeah. right? I mean, that's the question. And it's going to happen more and more. It happens a lot in, you know, the configurators, obviously, yeah, the catalogs. Yeah. The, you know, many manufacturers stopped printing catalogs a couple of years ago. So it's coming with most new tech. It's getting introduced where you can see the financial efficiency the easiest and where the incumbents push back the least.
Yeah.
Because nobody's like, oh, yeah, I want to spend 120 days in a white studio, except the photographer that's making money.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's no creative saying, oh, let's fight for the studio shoot in front of a white psych, you know, get the car and do this. I mean, obviously, it's shit for the people who are losing that business, but that has been ongoing for quite a while. So, you know, everything, so it starts from the simpler tasks and goes to the more complex, or you have the super high end, like Hollywood, where you do things that you could not do before. But with the appearance of AI in our lives last year, that was very interesting. CGI now is the good old technology. Very interesting.
Yeah. Reliable. So,
exactly. Before that, it was like, oh, CGI, I don't know. You know, why don't we go out and shoot? Now everybody's like, oh, it's not AI, it's CGI. Okay, I know CGI and it's not the crazy stuff. So it's very interesting that the AI hype actually is making it more
acceptable, I guess. Yeah.
Acceptable. Yeah. Thank you. Acceptable for some people to say, okay, let's do CGI, because at least there is craft or it's similar to what I know. And it's not just, that everything is black magic.
Yeah. You know? I'm seeing more just on my own sort of personal Instagram. And I wonder if other people, this is happening. I see more people I would call sort of digital artists, maybe in the car space, who are building a model of a car and then changing it, you know, customizing a 911 into some crazy Dakar thing. Kaiser is quite a famous one. And then you'll see he's built an environment, dropped it in, take some photos, made a video or whatever. And that's becoming more, I think that's becoming more widely seen. It must be. And people are going, oh, that looks quite cool.
Yeah, but also there, because the technology is getting faster, it's easier for them. You know, maybe, I don't know how he builds the environments, but he could go to Kitbash 3D, get elements there, upgrade them, put it together. So everything... When we started out a couple of years ago, you know, you had to be able to do everything. So you had to create a tree and the street and check in the car. And, you know, so everything had to be in-house, which was a big, big task. And, you know, the technology and the industry developing means I can go out and there is a store that has fantastic trees. And those guys... have, what do you call it, botanicians, you know, plant dudes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What do you call them? What's the right word?
I can't think of it right now. But yeah, botanica. Specialists so, in the
you know,
plant.
Tree dudes, right?
Arborologists so they trees. Or something.
Exactly. So they're in the team, so they build trees. That's all they do. And they're like, oh, this is fall, and this is spring, and this is the leaves are like this, and this is blah, 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 blah. So it has the has a depth to it. You're like, oh, I like this tree. But then you're like, you can trust the asset that you're using, or you know, a car or a table. So the moment these inputs become available easier, obviously you can focus on light, camera, and things you're good at. And this is what we're seeing in the industry, and I think the industry is growing. Because of games becoming more photorealistic. At the same time, you know, the VR thing, I'm not sure. But, you know, I see more websites, e-commerce, where you can turn your sneakers. You know, these things are happening and becoming easier. It's so the three-dimensional internet experience, maybe not in the goggles, But, you know, I don't mind turning around a sneaker to see what other, you know, so everybody. So it's like what everybody would want is going to happen, not what we tech dudes want, right?
Yeah.
Needs to be more useful than, oh, this looks cool.
Yeah. And from the...
It needs to help sell stuff.
Because, consumers, they just go, I like it or I don't like it. Or that's better. They never know what they want until they see it. And then they go, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
From your customer's point of view, is there anything you see them sort of asking for that is like, I don't know, different or pushing it a bit? Or what do you get? What's their sort of progression been?
Yeah, the customer. So it's also, there is like trends, and there's always been trends as in car photography or car imagery. So you're like, oh, we need people in the picture, right? Or in the film. And then you're like, no, we want to focus on design. And then, so, you know, there's like, it flows. The whole market does the same dance. I'm not sure if you follow the car commercial world, but the last 3, 4, 5 years is cars and there's somebody standing in front of the car.
Always.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but that's new. Because before it's like cars and little, very small people next to it. And you'll see what the, sometimes you see, you know, less strong brands have this car, small people next to it.
Yeah.
And then the more progressive ones are with people in front.
Yeah.
And now, which I prefer, the cool people have, okay, here's a cool car shot and here's a cool portrait shot. And let's solve it in layout. Let's not try to squeeze everything into it. It's like, you know, no, I'm not going to have sausage with my cereals. Thank you. No, it doesn't work. I mean, yeah, it's because something is going to win. And this is, but it's humans, right? It's like when you put a person into a car image, in any image, and the person can be super, super small. We are humans. We're looking at humans.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out who this human is, what this human is doing, and is this human my friend or my enemy? This is basically what happens in your subconscious mind all the time. So it's, as a marketer, do you really want to put people in there?
Yeah.
And if, when you put people, just be aware, it's basically the way this model, this talent, this actor, that's why celebrities work, because they have a brand. Like if you just have a talent or photo model, so this is the person that your car is going to be connected in the consumer's minds for the rest of eternity ish. You're like, oh no, I'm not a blonde woman in about 25. I cannot drive this car. If it's so clear this is your customer, then do it. But you know, I'm like, well, tracksuit, me, not so much, you know, maybe it's not the right car for me.
When you see those images, you go, I think most people go, am I the person in that image? Do I want to be that person? Do I want to be friends with that person? All that sort of stuff. In car imagery, I love a bit of like slightly blurry people, a bit of like moving through, you know, there's people you can't really necessarily see
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the people supporting the hand, even the hand, you know, it's like, it's very, you know, what are you saying? You're saying something with it, because if you don't want to say something, why is it in the picture?
And it is very tricky. As you say, you're always going to exclude someone by making a decision.
But did you see, I posted it on LinkedIn, but there's like a very cool young Polish studio that posted something with where they built a stable diffusion pipeline, where they essentially you go in and you just mask the person, tell AI just to work on the head, the face, whatever, and it, you know, obviously since it's so focused, it can do it pretty quickly. And they put 3D people, they render 3D people and just upgrade them, so you have the picture, you just up-res them. But you could essentially do that with, you know, change ethnicities.
So each person could see a different image.
And this is what the marketers want. And they could do it. I think they're building systems that can do it. It depends on the regulation, right? So in the States, you'll be able to do different things than in Europe. But essentially, this is what marketers are trying to do, hyper-personalize. And then the people stuff obviously becomes more relevant again. That said, you know, from a sociological, societal point of view, the bubble is getting worse. I mean, if you, all you see is reflections of yourself, I don't know.
Hey, you walk past a shop and in the window, you are wearing the glasses. You know, that's the sort of stuff. If you take it to the...
And that is like, you know, maybe I don't want to say, maybe I want to have...
Yeah, I want someone else.
...role model.
I want it to be aspirational.
You know? Exactly. So where's the aspirational aspect of it? If it's just me skinnier, I might also be pretty angry.
Yeah. Yeah, it brings up a lot of questions and things around that. I think there is a lot in, well, that we know, there is a lot in someone making a decision.
Yeah.
And that is the decision. And it might be right, it might be wrong, it might not be right for everyone, but like, it might work very well.
Yeah. It's, but you know, in car photography and talent in car photography, film, obviously you need people, but it's, the area that we are in, it's also the advantage. We don't have to necessarily do the talent thing, because at that point when it's launched, everybody's like, no, it's fine. We show the car.
Yeah, just show the car. Show the car. Normally some weird wide angle shot too close in a studio.
Well, that type of stuff.
All that fun
stuff. It's, it's crazy, right? It's like so many cars on the market, and actually, very professional markets, you still see stuff that's like, ooh, who did that?
Yeah. Yeah. You see it a lot. Like, kind of. I think the good stuff stands out to me. When it's been done well, whether it's cool use of colors, whatever it is, when it's done well, I'm not shocked, but it stands out. Whereas most of the time,
interesting, isn't
a
it?
Lot of stuff I see is like average. And I know. Yeah. That a lot of money has been spent. Yeah. Well, I feel it must have been, because none of this is cheap. Doesn't matter how you try and do it. So it's gone through a few people, a few professionals, before it's got to the end.
Yeah, but that's a bug and a feature, because in our experience, so there you have about the layer cake, we call it, is about seven people.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So you have art director, creative director. You have accounts, and you have marketing, point person one, CMO, and then car designers, so CEO. And obviously the danger of groupthink and, let's agree, let's find something in the middle, is very given.
Yeah.
In our experience, the only one of the solutions to overcome that is to create a preview image that is very strong, makes a statement, and that gets carried up, because the top people can say, I like it, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Because if you have something where like, this is it, but you need to think about this and decide that, they will not take it upstairs.
Yeah.
They're like, it's not finished enough, I cannot show it. So you just end up, running in circles until whoever has the final cut or the final decision gets to see it, then they might say, it's so bright, it's so dark, whatever. And then it gets salvaged, right? And it's like, at least this is the safe solution. And this is the reason why a lot of stuff is mediocre.
Yeah. It just gets slightly watered down at each level.
Yeah. And it obviously, I mean, imagine you're in marketing and a launch is just one of the projects you're working on, right? You're not going to risk your career for it. You just want
is it good enough
to work?
Is it good enough?
Yeah, next? No, also you just want to make sure whoever decides it, and if it's, it would be a lot to ask somebody in marketing to stick out their neck for it, even though it's very important for the brand. If the top people do not take over the project and do it directly, the normal people will be very, very cautious, especially when the big people are involved. They just want to be super safe.
Yeah.
And that's why it gets, you know, kind of boring because it's safe.
Yeah. And then you go, well, you came to us. And we think this. Yeah. We think this is what you want. This is what you're paying for. Or we think you are. And then they're like, yeah, but I kind of like this. And I kind of like that. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's that's why, I mean, for us, we do 4 to 5 launches a year, so not too many.
Yeah.
And when we do them, they're very intense. So, you know, we try to get a good understanding of our potential clients and partners and to also sometimes say, we might not be the right people for you because this is the way we work. And if you're not comfortable with that, it's not going to not gonna work.
It's not going to be a good relationship.
That's simply, yeah.
Well, how long does, I'm sure, you know, it varies massively, but from someone coming to you and saying, hey, we've got this car.
Yeah.
We want to launch it. Obviously, they know a while ahead, but how long from you getting your first bunch of files and going, we know we need this type of scene to here's a 4K video?
So it's also interesting. They know they're going to launch the car. Doesn't necessarily...
yes. Doesn't mean they tell you.
Lead to the reactions, oh, let's do this on time. So we can... Yeah, normal package that we deliver is like 30 seconds to a minute video, depending. And 6 to 15 visuals, stills, details, interiors, beauty shots, depending. The fastest that we can do and we do is 8 weeks, which is pure madness. From the call to here's your 4K video. But also those are intense 4 weeks, 8 weeks. And this is, you know, what I was saying. This is why we are looking very closely at the people we're working with, because I need access to the decision makers in that short time frame. We can write a timeline, but it's going to change. So it's more that we say, okay, we need at least 2 check-ins per week with whoever is making the call. Yeah. And you need to, it's like, we're a bit more like doctors, right? You pretty much have to do what we say, otherwise you're going to die. So it's not, but
it'll take longer.
it's not going to work, right? It's like, so that's also very interesting that, you know, being a specialist in this very specific area, it is important. It's, I mean, for me as a photographer, for example, wedding photography, I always thought it's incredibly stressful. I mean, I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have, I was like, oh, I messed up these people's memories, right? It's like, I think that's, I don't know, I would feel the pressure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they, you know, wedding photographers do. But, you know, so if you have a good wedding photographer, it's like, yeah, it's going to cost you twice as much, but this is what I do. And you're like, okay, where do I sign?
Yeah.
And I think in a way it's similar. So if we have clients that are like, well, no, this is the way it needs to go. You know, we do pass on projects where we feel we cannot deliver successfully. Because it's too, you know, it's the stakes are too high, the stress level is too high. You have no time to play games, politics, sit it out and wait. It's just all not optional, you know. So, but 8 weeks. Ideally, we said, well, 12 weeks would be better.
Yeah.
And it depends on the quality of the data. But also the data keeps evolving throughout the job. So we have 2 work streams where one team is basically just preparing the data. And we get like a quick preview model so we can start going into picture with it. And then they keep updating the model with the product specialist. So we don't have to take product feedback in the picture.
Yeah.
Right? Because that keeps evolving. And we say, no, we have this thing called spec check. So they do a specific set of renders. They always do the same renders. It's like, you know, standardized. And then product people say, oh, no, the headlight is wrong. The rim is different, whatever. Yeah. So we update it, send it again. So it's like, just happens in a different, ideally towards the end before we hit the big render button, it needs to be done, right? But it gives us a bit more time
and is that because
to work on stuff.
They have not built their model? Or it's just things change over time?
Things change, and then, you know, it's when you look under the hood, it's fairly complex, right? You have lots of different materials, material assignments. Car paint is a universe for itself. Chrome is a universe. So, you know, with all these things, when you go into detail, you have different chrome types for different manufacturers. Leather, you know, if you do interior, it's a whole different ballgame. They need to see it. The product people need to see it. We need to see real samples. And especially with launch cars or prototypes, sometimes they tend to do more interesting stuff. So they might introduce a leather color that is super cool, and they'll maybe never actually publish it like that. But, you know, they have this shade of blue that is super special. So try to hit that. And synchronizing all that information is a lot of work. Although you would think, oh, it's technical, it should be easy. It's not.
And then I guess with those sorts of things, your lighting in the scene makes such a difference of how it's going to look. And they'll be like, well, it doesn't look like. I remember when I did a tour of Red Bull.
Yeah.
And they were saying they had something like 5 different versions of each of the car colors so that depending on where the race is, you always see the same color car.
And you're smart. Like, absolutely.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I guess if it's under like neon-y lights, it's going to be different to if it's in a sunny desert evening.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware that they counterbalance the actual light situations. So they get a good
same. Because they want, smart. You know, they're. I can't imagine F1's quite, you know, they're spending a lot of money. I guess they're like, we want our brand to look, we don't want it to look orange or something. It has to look red. But I was like, that is quite interesting. Like,
I didn't know that. Yeah, but it actually, you're right. It does that. But we try to, so we said, we don't balance the color to the environment. So because we, you know, you calibrate the color in the spec check. You say, okay, this is the blue. Yeah. You can color pick it. It's in the white studio with gray shade. You know, you have charts and everything. Calibrate. Then we say, okay, now this is in a sunset situation. So this is what it looks like.
In sunset.
In a correct exposure. If you want us to push the blue, we do that in retouching.
Yeah.
We don't change the material because you need certain, you know, safe things, right? But obviously we can always, you know, change the color and retouching, and we do, right? You have RGB and CMYK and all these things, you need to adapt it.
And then I guess that final bit is the sort of artistic finishing on the hard stuff. You've got the raw data correct and it works on from there. It's quite interesting. I don't know. I hope the automotive enthusiasts listening are interested. I hope so. If you've made it to here, you must have done. I normally wrap these up with five car questions. I know you're big into design, but you worked with cars for a long time, so I'm sure you have some opinions. Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey?
Oh, I did cross country from Las Vegas to New York. Before I started working as a photographer myself, with two friends, we bought a Cadillac Eldorado in Las Vegas off a Swiss guy and drove cross country to New York and had everything. Car broke down, had to be repaired, roof wouldn't close, it was a convertible. It was light blue metallic and white seats. That's a very memorable experience.
And were you taking lots of photos of it at the time in the various settings?
I have some, but not so many. Yeah. It was film.
Yeah,
shooting on film.
things have changed. If you could only drive one sports car for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I would have to start driving sports cars. But I'm
okay. Well, if you would only drive one car, what would be your one car?
I like as a sports car, I like the Jaguar F-Type.
Oh yeah, nice.
I like that one.
Nice design.
Don't have it.
Nice car,
but I like it.
This would be we'll see how this one. What's the most undervalued car at the moment that you can think of? Are you like attuned with this in any way?
Undervalued as far as what you can
buy it for, or possibly
you could
take a design spin on it and go, I think this looks cool and most people don't.
I think other people like it as well, but there's like this S-Class coupe from the 80s, and I couldn't give you the name. I'm not so good with names. I think that's pretty cool. But as far as real money and cars, I'm totally...
Yeah.
I don't bike.
Fair enough. Are there any interesting cars that you're looking at, or any technologies that you find interesting, whether it's EVs or anything like that?
Well, me personally, I would hope that the hydrogen stuff actually pans out, because in a way, I think that might be a better solution. I understand that efficiency doesn't pan out yet, but also I read about it. So what the batteries are doing is not so sexy, right? So it's like, that is an unsolved challenge. But I think, in general, I'm living in a city and I really enjoy the hourly rental solutions. And also, in Paris, I'm not sure how it's in London, but we did something for Renault. They're putting something like that on. I think that's a good thing, instead of people just putting their cars everywhere.
Yeah, I've spoken to one person who was Lincoln Co., which is like an app membership type platform.
Well,
the guy who's the founder of that, and then we have various Zipcar type things in London. You can rent one.
Yeah,
there's actually one on our street you can use. I don't use it very often, but I've got friends that use it quite a lot. For getting around a city, and I've got a friend who lives in Stuttgart who uses them all the time, I think. It's actually quite a liberating experience versus
it is, and it is
having to deal with your parked car. And
exactly, and then also choosing a car. So it's, with those, we also have a service called Miles. They have larger, like little buses and stuff. So because you need a large car, I have four kids, right? The oldest one is 19 now. Yeah. So, but for a while I needed a 7-seater. It was not an option. And so there are not too many out there, but then you have this huge car. We had a Land Rover Discovery.
Yeah.
It's a big piece of car to haul around a city for 8 minutes.
Yes.
Then you park it again. So it's not.
It is.
Easier to rent those in the city. It's fine. You rent those, put them.
It seems to be
back.
an interesting. I think people getting their heads around it. For my usage now, we have a small EV, and then we've got a big estate car, and I've got some sports cars and stuff. But the small EV, and I live in London, gets used all the time, and that is the one that makes sense. Like it actually makes sense to use. I never have to sort of fill it up. It's always charged, and it just works really well. But we have an expensive big estate car that never really gets used that much. It's quite comfy. It's quite good for long journeys, but often it's just me in the car. So it makes no sense.
Yeah.
And everyone generally, you have this large, expensive, big vehicle that's mainly doing short journeys with not very many people in it.
Exactly.
It's like, I think it's a difficult one to get around to go, in reality, for ours, for sure, most of the time, renting or borrowing a big car every now and then would make a lot more sense than just running small cars.
The thing is, so I gave up the Discovery because it broke down.
Yeah.
The engine. And then I took it to the shop and then they're like, oh, it's a French engine. I'm like, guys, you're putting that on the French now after it blew up? It's whatever. So I actually loved the car. I was very happy with it. But, you know, obviously with four kids, you know, it had good usage, but the excuse back then was like, oh yeah, we're going to go to Austria skiing. Right. And it was like the most horrible trips ever because two of the kids would throw up. And, you know, it's like, it was never fun, right? It would have been easier. Actually, it less expensive to fly. You know, when I ran the numbers later, same thing with the actual car. I mean, it's nice to have, you know, the living room on wheels to scoot around. But, you know, when you run the numbers, it's like I could rent a car every day. Not like from sixth, but, you know, those, the ones on the street. And if I have a longer trip, it's easier to say, oh, I go to sixth Europe car, whatever. And I'm like, oh, knock yourself out. X5M, right? I'm like, oh, cool. You know,
sounds good.
And drive it for 2 days and get rid of it and done with it, right? It's and it's less expensive in, you know, in my lifestyle because, you know, in the city, like you say, you just have short trips. Even using taxis, less expensive than owning a big estate 100%. Car. My numbers, huh?
We have some friends that live other side of London, about an hour from us, and we always had this interesting debate because they, up until very recently, they didn't drive. So if they were getting somewhere, they might take a taxi or whatever, and we would drive to meet them. And there was always this thing of like, well, we'll drive to them because they don't have a car, and therefore it's expensive to get to a taxi. And my brain immediately was like, well, this is ridiculous because having a car is expensive. Like, it's much more expensive than getting taxis. So they can get a taxi. Thank you very much.
But it's, and also, you know, imagine you have repairs, you have this, you
someone
have tickets,
hits it, insurance, etc.
Nothing but trouble.
It is an interesting
one. Now we actually have a Fiat 500.
Fiat 500
convertible. Very low monthly payments, and the Italian's interior is nice. Engine obviously is ridiculous. It's like you feel like jumping out and pushing the car while you're driving, but it's, you know, it's a city. It's fun.
It works.
It's
fine.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. It's a job.
I'm interested to see how these things evolve, and I'm into my car, so I like my sports cars, but I'm very much a right tool in the right situation, and I'm very aware of having the wrong tool in the wrong situation is not great. Like, when you want to park and you're in a massive vehicle, or you just want to go and have a drink, and you're like, oh,
try going on a skiing trip with three kids in your Porsche. 911.
Doesn't work so good.
Not going to happen.
Right. The final question, which I don't know how this one's going to go. Maybe we can do it from a design point of view. Five car garage, unlimited value. Are there any design? Are there any
So I can pick whatever car
anything you like.
All right. Okay. So I would definitely DeLorean just to have it. Fun car. You know, 80s kid. Range Rover.
Yeah.
Five cars?
Yeah. I mean, these could be at. You go, that is such a good
design.
Just
to look at.
For most people, it's you're going to drive them and whatever, but I know you like design, so...
Well, you know, it's like F-Type, I already said. That's not a very special car, right? It's, you know, I would like to look at a Jaguar E-Type. I always liked those. I've never driven one, I couldn't say so, but that would be something.
Yeah.
Then I would throw in something Italian, like a Lancia, but it's like, you know... I'm out of bullets. I'm not a G-Class guy. I don't need that. You know, I like the old Defenders, but also I'm failing you.
It's okay. it's okay.
I could give you the Ferraris, Maseratis and all that, but it's interesting because I was also, like to say, I fall in love too easily because we're working on all these cars all the time. I'm like, oh, it is a cool one. I should get it. They're obviously way too early to order. By the time you can order them, I'm onto something else. Yeah. But that's interesting. That's the maybe the funny thing that I'm a non-car guy.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough.
It's quite a good, it's a cheaper way of being a car guy.
I guess. No, I have friends that collected Ferraris and they're totally into it, but it's they're almost married to the mechanics. Yeah. It's like, oh no, I know it. Luigi, he knows where to get that there.
His part and whatever.
If you enjoy that, it's awesome. It's just not my my world.
Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast. It was really interesting to talk about. Yeah, CGI.
Thank you very
I've
much
not had a good conversation about it, so it's good. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's been great. Cheers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.